Hello and welcome to Take the Black, a podcast where we discuss all things fantasy and science fiction, and especially the worlds of Westeros, Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon, and all that sort of stuff. And specifically, today is the first of our after shows for A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, the new Game of Thrones spinoff that premiered right before you are watching this episode. My name is Daniel Roman. I'm the editor of winteriscoming.net, and I'm so psyched to be joined by our new co-host, Mark Nettles, who Game of Thrones TV and film content creator. You might know him from House of Nettles on TikTok and YouTube. Mark, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be back in Westeros. We got new places. We got new faces. I'm ready for the little adventure we're about to go on.
Yeah, so A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, it premiered as we're recording this. It will have premiered. We're recording it a day or two early. But yeah, January 18th, the first episode is out on HBO. We have both seen it, and we are going to get into all the nitty-gritty of this episode. We're not going to spoil too many of the long game things. You know, we're keeping focused on this first episode. But yeah, it's exciting stuff. This is a smaller scale journey to Westeros. It's based on Martin's Tales of Duncan Egg novellas, and it's about a knight and a squire doing knightly stuff. So Mark, let me pitch it to you. Like, you, I think, just watched this, right? Just, yes, like all the people watching this episode.
We all just watched it.
I have not seen it multiple times. So how did you feel about it? Like let's just start overall impressions. We like this thing?
Do I like A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms season one, episode one?
Yes.
I was happy to be back into the world. Everything was different. It felt different. And it just seemed a character opening up the whole season with a character by himself in the world, just losing the only person he had and having to start over. It's like, this is a different type of setting we're in than anything we've seen in A House of the Dragon or Game of Thrones.
Yeah, totally. It definitely, I love that they started with like the very first scene of the novella, like very true to Martin's story, like Dunk burying Sir Arlen of Pennytree, his old knight. And yeah, you're right. It is very, very different in so many ways. And we're going to dig into some of those a little more deeply, because there are some like production things that I think are so cool on this show. So that first scene, was there anything that stood out to you that surprised you about it? They did do some things a little bit differently from the book, but like, it's pretty faithful.
Yes, especially opening it up with him burying Sir Arlen. You see the rain falling, you see him crying, and good way to symbolize the rain, water going down his face. Are there tears? Is he crying? You're not supposed to be sure, but I mean, he's crying. I definitely enjoyed how he, instead of the internal monologue, when it's just him and the horses, they were able to really, he had someone to talk to. Was it a person? No. Was it three horses staring at him crazy? Yes. So we were able to get that dialogue out there so we can know what he's thinking, know what potentially his plan could be until he comes to the conclusion. Let me go out here and be a knight and go on some knightly adventure.
Yeah, totally. That's kind of like a through line of the episode and of the season as a whole, because I've seen the whole season. If my spoiler-free review is up on the site if anyone wants to read it. But that idea of taking the internal monologue and making it dialogue, I feel like I can't remember how much Thrones did that, because obviously there's internal monologue there too in those books. But like A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms does it a bunch of times, even in just this first episode. And like, man, it just makes the scenes work so well. Like the end scene too, which we'll get to, but like that scene is also, that was an internal monologue scene that's now dialogue between Dunk and Egg. And it hits me right in the heartstrings.
It helped form that little bond a little closer than, of course, that bond's formed in the books between those two, but they just a great job of making sure some of those thoughts in their heads, we're able to hear them, and in creative ways, they were able to bring that dialogue to us.
Yeah. So since we're talking about, their Dunk and Egg and their chemistry and stuff, they meet, briefly after this first opening scene when Dunk goes to the inn, just like in the book. And there's a bunch of fun scenes there where, Egg takes his horse, and then he walks in on him trying to ride his horse and is like, you know, do you want a clout in the ear? Get off my horse. How are you feeling about these two? Because I feel like this is the thing this show couldn't afford to get wrong, is like the chemistry for Dunk and Egg. Do you think they nailed it?
I think they nailed it. I think it's doing a good job of slowly forming that relationship between the two. I think they're learning a little bit more about each other. Egg's learning how honest of a person Dunk is.
Yeah.
And Dunk seeing Egg go around, he's like, wow, look at this kid all by himself. That was me. I want to help him. For the simple fact, when we do see them kind of reunite, I know it's kind of toward the end of the episode, him offering, hey, I'm going to offer you protection. If you could be my squire, offer you food, protection, clothes. And that's stuff he barely has himself that he's offering his child. Like, hey, I'll give everything off my back to protect you. And I'm like, oh, that's so good.
Yeah, totally. I love the like slow zoom on Egg's face in that scene when Dunk is offering him this stuff, that it's like, you know, he's leveling with him. He's talking to him person to person. And like, you know, if you are watching this and you've read the novella, you know that has some extra significance to Egg. But like in general, that scene of like him just speaking to him on the level and like what that means to Egg in that moment. I loved it, man. They're just, the rewatch value on this thing is great. Which like rewatch, or like if you've read the book, the watch value, however you want to think of it. But yeah, I totally agree with you. I think they nailed the chemistry with these characters. Dexter Saul Ansel, who plays Egg, I feel like, you know, child actors, like there are varying degrees of like, that's a good child actor. Like, you know, like some of them, like they look the part, but they're not necessarily popping off the screen or whatever. I feel like this kid, like he can act. He's so good.
He is being witty as we need him to be. And I know sometimes that could be hard for a kid. Like you have to be a good child actor if you're going to play play a witty character, be able to banter back and forth. And yeah, he's doing a very good job with that, just in his line delivery. Like, okay, he's coming off a little brash, trying to puff his shoulders out and hold his own ground as best he can, being so, yep, you know, almost the size of an egg.
Yeah, totally. And Peter Claffey is doing an incredible job as Dunk too. I feel like there's something about, you know, the book is all from Dunk's perspective. So seeing him from the outside, I feel like Claffey is bringing things I didn't expect to the role. Like Dunk is almost more comedic seeing him from the outside, and like the expressions he's making, and like they've definitely dialed it up for the show where he's bumping into stuff left and right. How are you feeling about Peter Claffey as Dunk and like, and that more comedic kind of slant they're taking him on?
Yeah, I think they're doing a good job of using that, even the physical comedy of,
yeah,
because Dunk throughout the novellas makes that joke of, hey, he's hit his head on all the beams in Westeros, yeah, and all the ends and all that, and we see it happen. Like, hey, my man is tall, and he, yeah, keeps hitting his head when he's in that scene with a plumber. And I'm like, oh, okay, they're pulling this straight from the book. I like it.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, the comedy, they really kind of dove right in from that. Like the two things that surprised me with this right from that first scene with Arlen of Pennytree was like, one, like the flashbacks, like very comedic, the poop scene right after. I was like, okay, this is a choice. I didn't expect this. But then also there's more emotion in the Arlen scene than I expected too, because you're seeing Dunk, you know, cry in the rain and stuff. Yeah, I mean, I'll pitch it to you. This is kind of a silly question, but like, how'd you feel about that poop scene? Because that took me aback when I watched the first time. I was like, all right, we're doing this.
I thought they played that smart, the way they used it, because they start using the Game of Thrones music. And I'm like, oh, it's supposed to be a different theme song. What is this? What is this about to go into? And he's just, it's coming out his rear end. He's standing behind the tree. I didn't see any toilet paper. I'm not going to ask any questions, nah, how he got clean.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I just think that was good comedy. Yeah, probably one of the best poop scenes I've seen.
Right. Hopefully you've not seen too many, but yeah, it's up there on the ranking of poop scenes. But yeah, I feel like this show, it does, like, you know, at this point, Game of Thrones is like one of the most established franchises like in the world. Like there's no way around that. Millions of people have read these books. Lots of people have read the Dunk and Egg novellas. I feel like there's a feeling here of like playing with the audience almost a little more than like you know, House of the Dragon or the original Thrones, where like they're toying with your expectations. Like you said, like they started playing like the nice swelling music and then like cut to a poop scene. It's like, all right, you're just really trying to keep the viewer on the back foot and just have fun. Go with it.
Yeah, and a good job just adding that little extra. Like if you read the book, you're like, okay, I know the story, I know how it's supposed to go, and just adding a little bit extra dialogue to certain conversations, get that little context into it. It's really, really well done to keep you entertained throughout it. So even you're like throwing for a little surprise here and there.
Yeah, totally. So I did want to ask. One thing they did change, and like we don't need to harp too much about like book changes and whatever, but one addition the show made that I find really interesting is the flashbacks, where like they're mostly using them kind of for comedic effect. Like Dunk in that first scene, like he's narrating all the times Arlen like hit him for being a bad squire, and then like we get brief flashes of it. And like, how did you, this is interesting because like we're seeing Arlen of Pennytree alive, which like we never did in the book. So how do you feel about the flashbacks? Do you like those? Is it too goofy? Where are you at?
I think it's a great way to add more to the book that we didn't get, because we're getting everything through the rose-colored glasses of Dunk when we're reading his POV. It's like, hey, Arlen was great. He was awesome. And not to say he wasn't, but he's a man that can also have flaws. He was an older man in Westeros, probably had certain beliefs, and the way he... we see he's hitting Dunk. I'm like, okay, maybe he didn't need all those hits to the head. We can maybe taper like one or two back. But good use of flashbacks, especially the one when Dunk was asking him, like, oh, I want to be, asking, like, am I going to be an awesome knight like you one day? And he's just eating. I can't remember what he was eating. And he's just not paying him any attention at all. Is it just those two walking down a road in Westeros? And it's like, all right, that's not what Dunk remembers. And a lot of times it's what you remember what makes the person. Maybe it's not what happened, but how it made you feel. And if getting Dunk helped, if getting hit helped Dunk be a better person that we got to see, okay. Probably don't hit the kids though, guys. Nobody hit the kids.
That is not the message of a Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. He threatens lots of clouts on the ear, but Dunk does not give out the clouts on the ear. I like the flashback. The first time I saw them, I was like, okay, this is a choice. But I do think like they use it so well for like comedic effect, for seeing like, you know, like you said, like the best ones to me are when Dunk says a thing and then the flashback shows like the exact opposite. Like, I think that scene, he's like, Arlen of Pennytree always meant for me to be a knight. And then the flashback is, do you mean for me to be a knight? And then he just totally ignores him. Like that is fun. And I feel like that sort of stuff was really left to the reader's imagination in the book, where like there are things Dunk remembers about Arlen, and like there's kind of a niggling feeling of like, was this actually what Arlen was like? Like, did Arlen really, you know, there's a question, did Arlen even actually knight Dunk? That kind of hangs over the book a little bit, because there were no witnesses. Like,
there was a Robin.
There was a Robin, yeah. What did you think of Plummer? What did he say? The Ashford chair that he threatens Dunk with. I was like, man, they really committed to the fun in this. This is a funny scene.
Yes, I'm happy we didn't see any Ashford chairs. That would have made a different television show. I like and that was another good instance of adding dialogue to add characterization to Plummer, of him, you know, showing how he can joke, but also looking at Dunk like, hey, man, I do want to give you a chance. Why don't you go out there and, you know, try to find another knight that can vouch for you, vouch for Sir Arlen, and maybe we can put you in a tournament. After he saw this big, tall, 6'5" man come in wearing farmer's clothes, as he described it.
Yeah. I cackled at the, you know, the Astro chair. We're not in the, what did he say? We're in the Reach, not the Riverlands. Oh, yeah. I feel like the writers of this show, like, it just feels like they love this story, which is really cool. Like there's no feeling of like wishing they were telling a different story or something like that. Like they're telling the Dunk and Egg story and like having a great time in Westeros.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill at its lowest price ever and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first and only GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Based on advertised cash price for 30-day supply of medication only. Membership required. Fee not included, and billed separately. Weight Loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
One thing I did want to ask you about is like on the production front, this story really takes place at Ashford Meadow. Like, we see Dunk get there. The beginning is kind of his journey to get to Ashford Meadow, and thankfully it doesn't spend very long on that. Like, he just kind of goes there in a montage after meeting Egg. How do you feel about the look of this show, the feel of Ashford Meadow, of, you know, the sets there, the costuming? I do want to ask about the music too, because this is not Ramin Djawadi. For the first time in a Game of Thrones show, it's a different composer. So how did you feel about that stuff? Does it work for you? Was it noticeably different than the other ones?
It was different, but especially that first scene with that tree, just Dunk on heels in a tree. I thought that tree looked amazing. I'm pretty sure it was fake, but it looked cool. Like, wow, this is like, it's ripped straight from the book. It was interesting because we're also just in one place this whole time. Like, unlike the other series, where we move from place to place, see a castle here, then we're in a different room in another castle over here. It's all in this one castle and the lands right outside its gate. There's nothing else. But all that worked for me, even seeing House is it Ashford who's going to tournament? Is that what the house is called?
Yeah, House Ashford.
seeing their sigil everywhere, the orange with the white chevron, I'm like, okay, all right. It's weird seeing another, a minor house sigil being so prominent throughout the whole episode.
Yeah, totally. That's the thing I kind of love about this story and this episode is, like, it really is getting us acquainted with some different houses that we never really saw in Game of Thrones, never really saw in House of the Dragon, probably because they're very minor houses. So, like, House Ashford, we also met two people from House Fossaway, who, you know, they're referenced in A Song of Ice and Fire, but, like, we never really spent time with, like, House Fossaway. So, but like, Punk does here. Like, we meet, who is it, Sir Stefan Fossaway, yes, and his cousin, Raymond Fossaway, who's his squire. And they're, you know, they're a fun addition. Stefan's not very nice. They had a fun comedic beat, I thought, with the he asks Dunk about his sword, and Dunk's like, "It's mine by right," and he's like, "That's an odd thing to say." So, any thoughts on the Fossaways or just the other characters we meet in general?
Yeah, especially the Fossaways, because definitely we're gonna come back to Stefan. He's the squire.
Yeah. Raymond. Yeah. Raymond is the squire.
Okay,
yeah.
too many Fossaways now. Only two.
Right.
Definitely you see maybe a kinship forming between Dunk and Raymond. He's like, hey man, yeah. sorry about earlier, sorry about putting you on the spot to fight my cousin. Why don't we come over here? Why don't we go to this little party? And, you know, I'll repay you a little bit. So so it's good seeing them. And I know we saw one Lannister banner in the background. So can't wait for
see some
golden lions eventually.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool to see the other banners. So obviously the big other house that we see in this episode is House Baratheon. So we meet Lionel, the Laughing Storm Baratheon, played by, I think, Daniel Ings. And man, he's a fun time, that Lionel Baratheon. I feel like they cast that, they wrote that part, just chef's kiss. What did you think of that whole sequence with Dunk going in there and then like the impromptu dance party?
I call it the Flea Bottom two-step.
Nice.
I love the sequence of especially that conversation that Dunk has with Lionel Baratheon. Just Lionel trying to suss him out. You see this tall, big guy in the background, look like he's dressed like a peasant. And it's like, why would he be here unless he's trying to do something nefarious? And it takes him having that conversation for him to realize, like, no, this man, he's not a spy for anyone. He's not trying to do something underhanded. He's just the guy looking for a meal. Doug said, I was here for the food. I was hungry. I think they did a good job of, and then showing how Lionel was able to open up, like, oh, you're an honest guy. You're big. Put your shoulders back and let's have a good time.
Yeah, totally. I love that conversation where he's like, you're either here to kill me or like court my favor. And it's like, nah, he was just here for, you know, like you said, the food. Cracked me up. And then the dance party. Yeah, that was really fun. I feel like it's funny because like a show like The Witcher does things like this where like they'll add like a fun musical break like that, but like it often doesn't quite work this or like it can feel incongruous. Here it was like it just fit the mood of what was going on in the tent. And then I love that they got like the after like end of party feel. I think they got really well where they're like sitting down at the end and Dunk is now wearing the antler crown. And he's talking to Lionel about agonizing and then agonizing about agonizing. And Lionel's just like, I'm too drunk. And he leaves.
Like, I want to help you out.
Yeah. So House Baratheon, really fun. And we're going to see a lot more of that guy. Obviously, he's one of the lead casts for this season.
I do got a random question about Lionel Baratheon.
Okay.
Is it an affront to House Targaryen if you're going to walk around wearing a crown, even if it's a playground?
Ooh, that's a fair question. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Is it? I don't know. I mean, they're not there yet, right? We didn't see any Targaryens this episode. Maybe they're still on the road.
Maybe they're still on the road. I know they said some princes are coming. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, it's a different era in Westeros here. So I am really curious to see the people's reactions once the Targaryens get to the tourney and like, you know, how people view them, people as in people in the show, view the Targaryens at this tourney, because you know, this is around 100 years before Game of Thrones, around 100 years after House of the Dragon, I think. Yeah. So like the dragons are all dead at this point in time. And I don't think we got a line in this episode, but Dunk at one point in the book, I think, thinks that Arlen said he saw the last dragon in King's Landing. So like it's within Arlen's lifetime that the dragons have died out. And like, why should people still follow House Targaryen if they don't have dragons? I'm so curious to see what that dynamic is like.
Yeah, just see if they do show up, seeing how they interact with all the lords who are there, lords and knights. Like, okay, no. Like we have less power and a little less stability. And
yeah,
how do we all interact with each other? How does the system still function?
Yeah, it is, and it's nice to see. So like, we'll see that for House Targaryen. We're seeing an earlier version of House Baratheon, which feels like pretty true to like what Robert Baratheon probably would have been like at a thing like this. Like, it's very easy to see Lionel and be like, yeah, of course that's Robert Baratheon's ancestor. Another one we saw in this episode was House Dondarrion, Manfred Dondarrion, who is not cut from the same cloth as Beric Dondarrion.
No, this is a different lightning lord. Well, lightning knight.
Yeah. Yeah. So how did you feel seeing House Dondarrion in the, like, do you have any thoughts about that guy? He was only in it for a minute.
Only in it for a minute. I know they which they needed to cut the little scene out where Dunk tells the whole story of House Dondarrion got their name and yeah. How Sir Arlen was there and he took that arrow. And that was a good scene. We saw Sir Arlen with the arrow in his belly. I'm like, yeah, how'd you live through that? I think it was good just to see how, like, up to that point, for the most part, some of the other knights we saw, they were mostly kind of honorable, kind of what you think how a knight should probably be. And then we had Sir, was it Manfred?
Yeah, Manfred. I think.
We had Sir Manfred, and I'm like, he's like, oh, okay, he is a jerk. I mean, we could probably suss that out when he saw we had that lady of the evening pretending to have the stones in her eye in the tent.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, what's going on here?
Yeah, that scene cracked me up. Dunk thought she was dead, and then she just woke up. Yeah, that and I feel like the two other horrors who appear in this episode, who Dunk has conversations with, I feel like they were kind of standout characters in this episode too. Especially, I think she's credited as Red, but the one who wasn't wearing a wig in the first scene, because one of them came out of his tent wearing a different colored wig. And at first I was like, oh, this show's got some bad wigs. And then we see her later in the episode without the wig. And it's like, oh no, that was intentional.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, wow, like, same thing. I'm like, man, this is a bad wig. What are they doing?
Yeah. I breathed a sigh of relief when I saw her without the wig. And I was like, oh, that was a bit they were doing. I should have had faith.
Yes. That was our fault. We learned.
Yeah, but I really like that, like, they were mocking Dunk, and he was like, you don't need to mock me about it. Like, I was just asking for help. Like, just earnest Dunk. And then they're kind of like, okay, we're a little sorry we were busting on you. Like, I feel like that's a part of, like, the soul of this story a little bit. Like, Dunk's just going to go around to people being earnest and forthright. And if they rag on him or whatever, like, he's just going to keep being the honorable dude he is.
Yeah, that's, hey, how you win people to your side. Like, some people do it through Mike. Some people do it through, you know, just being, he's his authentic self.
Yeah, totally. So I did want to circle back around. So the music for this, did it stand out to you as, like, very different? Like, I feel like it made this show almost, it feels smaller, but almost more, like, hopeful, the way the music goes in this. What were your thoughts? Like, was it weird not hearing Ramin Djawadi here?
It was weird. It was like hearing it. It was like the same family, different vibe. It's like we're talking to cousins with this music.
But yeah, yeah.
It was like you said. It made a little more light, a little more upbeat. We're like, okay, it's not as dreary of a political drama as some of the other shows in this verse. Like, it made it feel like, hey, this is a different thing going on.
Yeah, yeah, totally. It did. It almost reminded me of, like, you know, this is a shorter. So here's another thing I wanted to ask you about. It's a shorter piece, shorter episodes. The music kind of fits that vibe. Everything about this fits that vibe. There's no title card, you know, or there's no opening credits. Rather, it's just a Knight of the Seven Kingdoms on the screen.
We're trying to how get did, to do it.
Yeah, yeah. So how did you feel about the runtime? Do you feel like this was too long, too short? Did you miss an hour long episode?
For this story, I feel like that was a perfect amount of runtime for the first episode. I can't wait to watch the other episodes and see what's going on. But for what we got, I never felt like I was like, oh gosh, it didn't feel too long. I would have been happy with 20 more minutes. If they're gonna keep writing like this, I'm like, hey, you can add 10 more minutes. I won't say anything.
Yeah, I'd watch it. Yeah, totally. I feel like I would gladly watch more too, like, if they wanted to riff on stuff. But I also feel like, you know, when they first announced they were doing this as 6 episodes and everybody thought they were hour long episodes, it was like, whoo, they're going to have to really stretch out the Hedge Knight to fit 6 hours of TV. But doing it as half hour episodes, I really like that for, like, the, you know, like, the comedic sci-fi and fantasy. Like, this show reminds me a lot of Murderbot on Apple TV. That was similarly, it was based on a novella and, like, leaned into the comedy even more. And like the half hour episode, it's like it gets in and out before it overstays its welcome. And like, I'm always going to be eager to watch more, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Just based off, I will be watching this episode so many times over again. Just because it's also quick, like you said. Hey, it's a quick story. We're in it for 40 minutes. I think the other runtimes range between 30 to 40-ish minutes. So
yeah,
you're in, you're out. We're on another episode, and the story just keeps a good pace so far.
Yeah, totally. And I kind of love how, so the end of this episode, it ends with Dunk going back to his camp. He sees Egg is already there. He rode in a farmer's cart. He set up the camp. He washed stuff. He cooked a fish that he presumably caught from the river or got. So maybe he bought it. I don't know. But he's cooking a fish. He's taking care of the horses and stuff. And then they lay down and go to sleep together, you know, with the shooting star overhead. And the episode ends with them going to sleep. So it's like we get the full, you know, day, 2 days essentially from when Arlen passed. How did you feel about the end scene? Any thoughts on like the final Dunkin' Egg stuff of it all?
I think that was a great way to end it and show how Egg is not catering to Dunk, but how he says something and instead of just saying the answer, like they see that shooting star over the trees, and he's like, hey, you know, that brings luck and we're the only ones looking at it. And he could have easily said, like, hey, that means we're the only ones that are going to get that luck. Like, but he just turns around and then Dunk has that realization, like, wait a minute, all that luck is ours.
Yeah, totally.
A little smile go across his face. Like, okay, he's learning how to navigate our Dunk the Lump.
Yeah, totally. It gives me, it's the warm feelings, that scene. It reminds me of like the first season of The Last of Us, where there were a few like good, like, campfire moments with Joel and Ellie where they were like in sleeping bags laughing and stuff, and it's like you need that for these two.
Yeah, sometimes you just gotta get there, you gotta sit down like, hey, what, let's figure this out real quick and then figure out the next day as well.
Yeah, so let me ask you, was there anything, I feel like we've just gushed so far, which is cool because it was really good. Yeah. Was there anything you didn't like in this episode?
You asked a really good question. For this first episode, no, I was just so happy to be back in Westeros. There wasn't anything that really stood out to me like, oh, they could have done that better or that wasn't up to par. Understandable, it was a different tone, different take than what we're used to, but it really fits this story that they're telling. So I'm episode one so far in, I don't want them to change not a gosh darn single thing. I'm not gonna let you do it. But what is there anything that you're like, ah?
Not really, honestly. Like when the flashbacks first happened, like I said, I was like, that's a choice. Do I like it? And then like watching the episode, I was like, yeah, this is great. And I feel like there were one or two moments like that where I didn't dislike things, but like I was like just processing, like, okay, you guys are doing this really faithfully, but still carving your own path a little bit, like Plumber with his very loud spit, you know, like, but I ultimately, like, I just had a blast with this. Like, it's just such a breath of fresh air, this show, because it is different than House of the Dragon. It's basically the exact opposite of House of the Dragon, which is like a tragedy, like through and through. Like, this is the total opposite. And I don't know, I just really enjoyed it. And I feel like I can't wait to watch these over and over because I just want to spend more time with Dunkin' Egg.
Yeah, especially once they're all released. They're like, hey, is it super quick to watch? No, but it's not super long.
Yeah. Yeah. Easy for a good, you know, weekend binge. So do you have any, we've been talking about this episode for almost as long as the episode runtime.
Yes.
Do you have any last thoughts on this? Because we do have one other thing that we need to touch on in this podcast. We're going to just mainly do this as a Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, but a big thing happened this week that we need to at least discuss a little. So, like, do you have anything else you want to talk about for a Knight of the Seven Kingdoms?
I love the horses. Seeing all three of them together, especially Thunder. I'm like, please protect our horse buddies forever. May nothing ever happen to them. But no, this was a very, I was about to say good. It was a great way to start off a brand new series in this world. I can't wait to see what they add to it, their own spin, or what they add to it that maybe recontextualizes certain scenes that we read in the book, just adding that little extra oomph. Like, oh,
yeah,
I can see how it can go that way, because we also got to remember, hey, the book is the book. It'll always be there. Totally. It'll never change. But, you know, it's good to see sometimes a creative spin on certain things, or even George being able to say, hey, I think you should add this and make this, it can really help this scene a little more that I couldn't add in the novella the first time I wrote it.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's just a really good start to the season. And it's almost like more confident in the viewer a little bit that they didn't change a bunch of stuff. Because one thing that I feel like I didn't notice it when I was watching, but thinking back, there's not really a single like action scene in this. Like, we see the Fosse away sparring, but like thinking about Game of Thrones, which obviously the premiere for that was it was bookended by some action, right? So like we had the White Walker stuff at the beginning, we had Bran getting tossed from the tower at the end, but in the middle it was a lot of slower, you know, conversations and like Robert Baratheon arriving and meeting different people. House of the Dragon, I feel like, set out to shock viewers right from the first episode with the Emma Arryn birth scene that was like so horrific. This show, they're just content to be like the nice, quiet intro into the story, and like people are going to come along because it's endearing and it feels good. And I appreciate that.
Yeah, we're happy to be here. We're happy to be here on this new journey.
Yeah, totally. So yeah, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, first episode out now on HBO Max. Watch it, because I mean, if you're here, you already watched it. Watch it again.
Yeah.
So let me swing things in a different direction here. So as we're recording this, this just happened today. The Hollywood Reporter published a lengthy interview from James Hibbard, who wrote the book. Do I have it here? Yeah, I do have it here. I love pulling a book off the shelf. Fire Cannot Kill a Dragon. So James Hibbard is a reporter. He works for Entertainment Weekly, The Hollywood Reporter. He has been reporting on Westeros probably longer and more in depth than literally anybody. So when he publishes stuff, you can count on it having been vetted and being pretty accurate. He did a sit-down interview with George R. R. Martin that went up, where Martin dished on so many things. Mark, did you have a chance to check this interview out?
Yes. I was pulling it up on my computer, and I'm reading as quick as I can. I'm getting the parts, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah. So is there any one part you want to start with? Because there are a bunch of things. We don't need to go in depth on all of them, but I do want to, we got to touch on a few of them. So what stood out the most to you or that you want to talk about?
The most important part to me, you'll be surprised, is the confirmation that Jon Snow is alive
and yeah.
working on chapters for him. Did I believe he was going to come back regardless? Yes, but it's always better. I think it's the first time he'll confirm, like announcing like, hey, I'm working on a Jon Snow chapter. I'm like, all right.
Yeah, totally. So context here, A Dance with Dragons ends with Jon getting shanked, the end of season 5 of Game of Thrones. It's been kind of an open secret that he's coming back. You know, the show, that was the first big thing from later books that haven't been published yet that the show really revealed. Yeah. Jon is coming back to life. So that's kind of, he just casually confirmed it in this. We're working on some Jon Snow chapters, you know? That is a big deal. You're right.
Yeah. Well, I know the probably biggest deal was how his reaction was to House of the Dragon season 2 and his relationship with Condo, the showrunner for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just about how things kind of dissented with him giving notes back and forth during the creation of season 2, that process, how HBO, I think what he said, HBO kind of came in there and was like, hey, you send us your notes and yeah. we'll give them Ooh. The condo, kind yeah. of be the middleman.
Oof. Yeah, that's never a good sign. Yeah, that was the one that when I was reading, I was like, oh my God, like this is so messy. Because there was that big blow up in 2024 where Martin published this blog post kind of going into his issues with the show. And then the Hollywood Reporter article goes, it talks about this in a way that I don't think has been really revealed yet, where that happened. And then a panicked HBO person called Martin's assistant, who took the post down. And Martin was like, I would have left it up, but I would have looked like an idiot putting it back up after we already took it down. He was planning to write six of those posts going into all his problems. But then, you read about how this kind of came about. So he didn't talk too much about it because it was uncomfortable is what it seemed like. But essentially, like, he was like, I hired Ryan Condal. Like, I thought we were partners. And then this is another new thing. Condal had an issue with Miguel Sapochnik after season one and asked Martin for support, and Martin gave it to him. And that's why Miguel Sapochnik left. That for me was a, okay. Cause I don't think there had been any confirmation of why Miguel Sapochnik left.
Yeah, there were rumors.
Yeah. There were rumors that he was trying to get his wife a production credit on the show. She was an actor. She was Allison's handmaid in the first season. But like, that was really unsubstantiated. Like, we had no idea, but there was some beef with him and Condal. And then after that, Condal just stopped listening to George's notes and brushing him off. And yeah, what a mess. What a mess.
I guess we're getting a different story for House of the Dragon season 3. We'll see what are the repercussions of everything that's transpired between them now.
Yeah. Yeah. Another thing about that stood out to me. So this all boiled over in a Zoom call where Condal outlined House of the Dragon season 3. And then Martin was like, here are all my problems with that outline, all the reasons I don't like it. And he allegedly said, so this is not a quote from him, this is an inside source at HBO told James Hibbard this, that Martin said, this is no longer my story about what they're doing with House of the Dragon. And essentially after that, HBO asked him to take a step back from the series, which that I kind of glossed over that on my first read. And when I looked back, I was like, oh, they essentially canned George R. Martin from House of the Dragon season 3. And then they walked it back and they brought him back on. But like, woof. Yeah. Like,
I'm not sure how you heal that relationship once you make those decisions, once you say, hey, you're good over there, we don't really need your input, and now turn around and be like, oh, we at least need you to show up and be here for us when it's time to put all the production lights on.
Yeah, totally. We need the fans to feel like you haven't totally given up on us because, you know, the goodwill really turned pretty hard on House of the Dragon. So, yeah, that to me, that was one where I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm reading this. Any other things you want to talk about? There were a few others that stood out to me.
You know what? I'm always happy to hear that he's confirming that he's working on The Winds of Winter.
Yeah, same.
And working on those novellas. So, hey, he said he had two additional Duncan Egg novellas potential in the future. One dealing with Winterfell, another one dealing with, I want to say, was it the In a Penny Tree?
The Riverlands.
They're in the Riverlands.
Yeah, yeah.
So that probably stood out to me the most, just looking at it. Like, okay, George is still happy. And then just talking about some of the projects that didn't happen, like the Jon Snow project.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Because I would have been hyped for it. I'm a big Jon Snow fan, but it seems like he wasn't ready to dive back into Westeros or the Throne show. And if he did, that probably would have been the best one, because that character is so far away from everything happening on the main continent of Westeros. But it makes me think, like, would he want to do another show involving that main timeline without having the books out to kind of conclude some of those storylines?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard too, because he's had so many creative control issues with HBO. Like Thrones, you know, he griped about butterfly effects with Thrones, but there was never really a schism there because he hadn't finished the books. So like, how mad could he really get? And I feel like that's part of why we never saw him really have public spats the way he has with House of the Dragon. But yeah, I thought the Jon Snow stuff was interesting too, both because it talked about what the show would have been, which is apparently details James Hibbard has been sitting on for like two or three years that he finally could share, which was that it was going to be like a PTSD, like old Jon Snow show, where essentially he's north of the wall. He's driven off his direwolf ghost. He's thrown away his sword Longclaw. He's apparently, and this was like a quote from them, he's building cabins and then burning them down and rebuilding them. So like, he's just working through his issues, and Harrington wanted him to die at the end. So it seemed like it was a little bit of a catharsis project, because, you know, Kit Harrington kind of publicly had some very big, you know, problems moving on from Game of Thrones. Like, he checked into rehab and there was this whole thing. So like, yeah, I'm not surprised. HBO apparently thought it was too much of a downer, the pitch for the Jon Snow show, which, like, fair. But they're trying to revive it now, is what the article said. They brought on a new writer who is trying to do a show that would involve both Jon and Arya, who's over in Essos. I don't know how that works, but would you watch that? Like, I mean, obviously you'd watch it, but like, how do you feel about that?
I'll watch it, but I don't. I think the time has passed for that version of a throne show involving those characters. Could you even, I mean, you could probably get back anybody if you offer them a good enough deal to come back in for that character role. But would it make sense? Will we start getting a little, you know, I know we're already in fantasy, but we still, like, in a fantasy like this, we want it all to kind of fit into a box that all makes sense and how the story progresses. And I feel like we have to do a lot of leaps and bounds to get those characters together for whatever story they're trying to tell.
Yeah, totally. I totally agree with that. And I feel like A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms is a really good example of like why you don't need to do that. Because one thing I'm really appreciating so far in the show is House of the Dragon kind of took pain. It was almost like it was too afraid to fully break from Game of Thrones. Has the same theme song for its opening titles. It has a bunch of material that it has kind of added and inserted to make it more tied to Thrones, with this whole prophecy from Aegon the Conqueror, and then, you know, Daemon Targaryen's whole thing in Harrenhal, which basically ends with like a teaser for Game of Thrones that he gets from the Weirwood Tree. I feel like A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms is just like telling this other story without trying too hard to be like, we're still Game of Thrones. And I think it's going to really work well for people. So I hope that HBO maybe takes some notes from that. And also, it's a smaller scale thing. They can do it once a year and people will be happy about that. So, yeah.
Get some of those smaller scale shows and put it out there. And then they also, in that article, mentioned about potential Aegon's conquest and the debate between will they make it a TV show or just a film?
I think they're trying to do it as a TV show and films. I think it's a TV show with a film component. I don't have it in front of me, so I might be off on that. But yeah, that does not, the article compared it to a Dune style two-part film, and it's like, so that sounds like the opposite. But like, I mean, I watch it, like, we're probably overdue to get like a real movie or something in this world.
Yeah, I always felt that Aegon's Conquest, you know, they can prove me wrong, but not a good television show. But if you made it a movie, 2-3, if you want to stretch it, because it's all about Aegon winning a whole bunch of stuff. I think that'd be the best way to go. If you're listening to us, HBO and George R. Martin, do the movie.
Yeah, totally. Do the movie. So a couple of other things from this interview did talk about how he's still determined to finish Winds. He has no plans to have another writer finish should the worst happen. George is, you know, he's 77. He's constantly getting heckled by people about what happens if you die before you finish this, which, for the record, terrible thing to ask in a person. Don't do that. Someone did do that at Worldcon this year. I don't know if you saw this. There was a whole fiasco where SFF Addicts, wonderful podcast, they did a live episode there. And someone at the very end asked if he would let Brandon Sanderson finish it if he died. And yeah, it was bad stuff. But he was upset about this. He talked about it a little bit. I think it's the only time he's addressed it was in this interview. He said he really didn't need that shit, which is sad.
The older gentleman, you know, health is always a concern. But it's like, what? No, just stop bothering our elders.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, don't bother your elders, everyone.
Yeah, yeah. Would you talk to your grandpa like that? Hey, if you died tomorrow, can I finish your stuff? You know, like, there's an element of just like, treat people like they're people, and maybe we'll all be better off. So yeah, that was another thing. The only other one I want to mention here that made me chuckle a little was he said the end of the Song of Ice and Fire books he has planned will be less of a, he said the show was a quote happy ending. So sorry, Daenerys, the show had a happy ending apparently compared to what George R. R. Martin has in mind for it. He said Tyrion has always been a tragic character. He expects a tragic ending arc for Tyrion. Great. Sure, everyone will love that. Yeah, right. And he also was originally planning on killing off Sansa, but he said that could change because he liked what they did in the show with her, I guess. What do you think about that? That the end of the books he has planned will be more dour than what we got in the show?
You know what? That's the book series we all signed up for. Whenever you started reading it, it never seemed like it's going to have a happy ending. So-and-so is going to be king or queen, and everyone, the land is going to be pure. Like, no, we're going to, all the POV characters we got, we're not going to have as many when we get to the end. I think we all got to accept that. So I'm cool with that ending. About the Sansa, I wonder if the show changed his mind, or he was on the fence regardless, and he was like, "Yeah, I like her."
Yeah, maybe a little bit of both. Yeah, that's a really fair question. I feel like maybe both. Like, you know, he doesn't. That's part of the thing with this. He's talking about architects and gardeners, two different kinds of writers. One outlines everything, the architect. One kind of, you know, they water their garden. They figure it out as they go along. They know the milestones, but then fill in the rest. And he's that type of writer. And I feel like, does he know the ultimate fate of every single character? Probably not. You know, like, he's going to figure it out as he gets there. So I wouldn't be surprised if Sansa fits in there too. I think that's a fair statement.
As long as Jon Snow is there on the last page, I'll be good.
Yeah, Jon Snow rides off north of the wall, where he will, you know, drive off Ghost, and that's the end of the book. Great. Oh. So yeah, a lot of stuff in that interview. I would, if you are watching this, listening, I would recommend checking it out. It's on The Hollywood Reporter. We've also covered it extensively at winterscoming.net. Just like we're covering extensively A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. So it's probably about time to wrap this thing up. Mark, you have any closing thoughts?
Well, I want to say thank you all for staying here all the way to the end. I can't wait to be here, and we're going to be covering more of That Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. I can't wait to see just the adventures of Duncan Egg and how it's brought to the small screen. So, yeah.
Yeah, and welcome to you as the new co-host of Take the Black. Like, it's a blast. I'm enjoying this a lot. So I can't wait to talk every single episode of A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms with you as they air.
Yes, yes. Thank you. Hey, thank you again for having me, and having me again for all the weeks to come.
Yeah. So this podcast, Take the Black, if you are listening, we will be dropping new episodes each Sunday night after A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. If you want to read up on coverage, whether that's reviews, whether that's deep dives on the lore, whether that's catching all the latest news that people have said related to the show, check out winteriscoming.net, where we are covering all of this in exhaustive detail every single day. Check out Mark's stuff on TikTok, on YouTube, House of Nettles. And yeah, we will be back for more adventures with Duncan Egg next week. So until then, signing off. Take care, all.